The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO. And, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall.
It's episode 13 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Jason Bryant here with you today, joined by John McGovern, as always, and Terry Brands. A couple topics to talk about today as it revolves around college wrestling, the World Cup, Olympic trials, and, of course, some hijinks on the mat. And before we started, John was mentioning that Did we see this video that was circulating? You've seen it on Flow Wrestling, and I've seen it on Deadspin, and it's starting to hit the viral world of the way the internet works. And it's two Russian wrestlers. They're in a scrap, and then it becomes a scrap, and then it becomes a more of a scrap, although it didn't quite reach the level of scrappiness that the Russian Nationals did a couple years ago. And I just want to get a coach's aspect or a coach's input on, you know, when that situation type happens, when you've got two guys that get physical out of it, what do you got to do as a coach? First of all, Coach McGovern, we'll start with you. As a coach, to make sure you make sure that it doesn't get to that point ever. I mean, are you on the referee? Do you grab your athlete and protect them from that situation? So, Coach McGovern, how do you keep your athlete from getting in that type of situation?
Well, their officials, right, they've kind of really got it where some of those head slaps, in the NCAA at least, you know, they're trying to keep a little bit closer eyes. So if you're going to lose points and you want to win, I mean, it's about scoring points and winning. So I think in the NCAA it's a little better. It looks like it's better managed. I mean, you don't see a lot of that happen. Even once in a while, I think in the Big Ten, there was a Minnesota guy that punched somebody or something, almost looked like it. But usually it doesn't look like it's going quite as far because the wrestlers are trying to win and score points. I haven't had too many guys doing that because I think they know that that's something that's not going to help them from an official standpoint and scoring points, but at the same time, you're trying to bang the head, and guys like Pico, and, you know, that's what he does, and then him and Metcalf at Aegon, I mean, it's getting close where some of those guys, you know, they're trying to win and find an edge, but, you know, it's not MMA, and I think the officials are the ones doing a good job of keeping top of that, and the guys want to win, so they try and find a way within the rules to win. I don't know. I was kind of curious what Terry thinks.
Yeah, Terry, my question is, I guess, with that, do you think when you see situations like this, it's more personal between, like, there's usually some history? We don't know much about these two Russians that were in the fight, but, you know, John brought up Pico and Metcalf, and there's a little bit of John between those two. I mean, there seems to be some general – there's a mutual respect in terms of wrestlers, but there's, like, a little bit of a dislike between the two. Do you think when you see a super physical bout, it's really between guys that typically – don't want to be on the mat with each other?
Or the other way around, as I see it, is I see two intense guys that want to be on the mat more than the other guy does, and they're going to prove it, that kind of thing. I don't know. I think it's a territorial thing. I think it's a stake your claim type of thing with that match. This Russian match, you know, I mean, who knows what's going on over there? There's a lot of the stuff with, you know, the Russian Nationals a few years ago, and then the deal in Krasnoyarsk back in, you know, 08 or 07. That was more where you had, you know, somebody from, you know, Vladikavkaz and then somebody from Chechnya. And so you have these religious differences too, you know, and, you know, they're just not friendly. They're just social. They're socially, they're not friendly. They're from different cultures, and you know, they have some dysfunction about that, and you know, it shows in the matches, and they take it to a personal level. But it doesn't mean it's right or it's wrong. I think when any time it goes to this level, I think it's wrong, obviously. You have to be under control. You know, where I'm at with this is you always are in a position to maintain control of your athlete and, you know, get in between things to keep the escalation from happening when it comes to that, you know. So I think that this went way overboard, you know, when that guy took off to the center of the mat to tackle that guy. I don't know where he was at mentally, you know, probably not in a good spot.
Now, from an athlete perspective, I think all of us have encountered this, whether we were, you know, new to the sport or been, you know, winning world titles. But, you know, there's always a point in a match that we get frazzled. We kind of lose ourselves for a moment. And what is it as an athlete? What do you have to do as an athlete to make sure you have to get past that, to be like, all right, I got to keep my head. I got to make sure I don't do something stupid, get thrown out of this match, get disqualified. I mean, we've all lost our cool on the mat before. What do we have to do as athletes and wrestlers and coaches to make sure that we don't get to the point where we see the big fights like we have at the Russian video and at Russian Nationals?
You have to know what's at stake. As a competitor, you have to know what's at stake. If you retaliate, you're gone. It's that simple. Right or wrong, even if he hit you first and you retaliate, you're gone. As a coach, it's the same thing. You have to realize what's at stake. You're being relied on by your athlete, and part of that, you know, is to stick up for him when it comes to that, but also to have control of the situation so that you don't get ejected or get into a situation where you're going to hurt you know, your guy going forward from an official, you know, maybe having a grudge against you, so he takes it out on your athlete, that kind of thing. So there's kind of a fine line there, and then, you know, you never ever want to go to the other side like these guys did, or, you know, like the Ohio State football coach did. What was his name? Woody Hayes? Is that the guy?
Well, you're going back in time for that one. Yeah, that's a legendary story.
You know, That deal there, you know, that when you get to that point, you're out of control, and that's almost, you know, where you got to go get help.
Now, moving on, we're sticking with the freestyle side of things for the moment, and we just had the World Cup in Los Angeles. The United States finished second to a very strong Iran team, came down to the last match. There was, you know, Russia didn't bring their A team, but, you know, we know how good the Russians are. Their 3 and 4s are just as good as most countries' number ones. And first of all, Coach Brands, what were your perspectives on the World Cup? I was back in L.A. for the second year in a row. The Iranian contingent out there on the West Coast is pretty big. I mean, their fans seem to basically control the tempo of the stands, but you know, second year in a row we've had the World Cup back in the United States. General takeaways.
Takeaway is you have opportunities there, and seize them, take advantage of them. You know, immediately what comes to mind is Barner. You know, our Olympic champions on the mat. Everybody in the stands, except maybe 2 or 3 people, thought he was going to lose that match. And he finds a way to win it and puts the U.S. in a position to win that dual meet in the finals against Iran. That is something that you have to seize. You have to take advantage of that. I don't know. It was either 02 or 03 was the last time that the U.S. has won a World Cup, I think, or maybe even 01. And it's been a while, and it should mean something. And especially when you have a lineup that you bring there and that you are proclaiming that you are getting ready, you have training camps for. These athletes, they have to seize that opportunity. And to a degree, maybe they did. You know, the Russian win was gutsy. I thought the Cuban win was gutsy, you know. And the Russian win was extremely gutsy. You know, they put us in a tough spot. And, you know, we had 3 tech falls, I think, that ended up being the difference and won that duel by a point. But And you know, it wasn't even a tie. We tie them and we lose because they had the pin, I believe. So, you know, you're in a position to do that, and you come back like that against Russia. You feel that wrestling, I shouldn't say national pride, but that wrestling national pride is starting to soar, and you have that momentum, and it's in L.A., and you have a guy like Andy Barth who is, you know, basically pouring his whole heart and soul into this deal. You got to find a way to win that thing. And I don't know, I'm not saying that it's the coaches or the administration or USA Wrestling or the athletes. I'm just saying that, you know, collectively, we, me and you and John and Dennis included, need to find a way to help the U.S. pull through there. It was really, at the end of it, it was deflating for me.
Now, when you say deflating, is it just the way whether it was Ray going out there versus Dolagnev, or just the fact that the particular athlete didn't shoot? I mean, what do you mean deflating?
It wasn't the choice in heavyweight. I mean, the coaches and the athletes have to make the call. I don't know. I heard that the athlete made the call and wasn't going to go, so Ray wasn't going to go and this and that. No, that wasn't deflating at all. It was just an atmosphere that you feel this surge. You feel this national pride starting to soar again, and, you know, the U.S. is going to be top of the World Cup. And then it doesn't happen. And it was just deflating. It was, you know, you're walking out of there and the Iranians are capturing the moment on our soil. And, you know, they probably outnumbered us 3-1. So, you know, there's just a lot of things there that as a competitor, it was hard for me to swallow. And it's not critical on Ray or who they chose or anything like that. It was just from a spectator point of view. Man alive, find a way, somebody who's been there and competed in environments like that, find a way to get done. And, you know, Zach Ray wants it as bad or worse as anybody that was there. So, you know, I'm not knocking his effort or anything else. I'm just saying that it was a deflating moment as a spectator and a coach of, you know, three of the guys that were, you know, on that World Cup team this year.
Well, let's talk about those three guys that were on that World Cup team. Obviously, Brent Metcalf, 4 solid wins. I mean, he's had 2 great World Cups in a row, still looking for that first world medal. Tony Ramos had some pretty tough competition. Shows he's there, 2 wins, 2 losses. But, you know, do you think, first of all, let's start with Tony. Do you think he's closing the gap on some of these top guns right now? I mean, the Cuban who's dropped down a weight has shown some dynamic stuff. He's been behind some stellar guys his entire career. Now it shows, you know, last year at the Worlds, he showed he was the man at that weight. Now he's down at the Olympic weight. So, I mean, obviously the Cuban provides dynamic matchups. And then, you know, where's Tony improving? Where does he need to continue to get better?
Well, down the stretch, he's, you know, it, from our perspective in the room, obviously we see growth with him a lot. We see a lot of growth with him from, you know, a fan's perspective or, you know, a manager like, you know, Coach Burnett's looking at it. He's looking for him to start getting his hand raised, you know, 4 out of 4 times at the World Cup. I'm sure. So, you know, those are situations that you have to correct if you're Tony Ramos and you have to come away with your hand raised in all 4 of those bouts. Both bouts were winnable. The Cuban, he was actually winning and in on the leg, you know, rolling to the corner and didn't have enough pressure into the guy. The guy was able to step over and cut the corner and cradle him up. And you know, and that was that match against the Cuban. And Ramos controlled that match. I was impressed up to the point of where he got hit. And then, you know, the Iranian match, the one thing with him is, you know, the area, and I don't need to say it for people that maybe are going to be scouting this next comment, but where Tony needs to be really, really strong, he maybe wasn't as strong as he knows that he is and should be aware of, maybe is even a better way to say it. And, you know, he, after the match, he knew it. He knows, and he was, you know, verbalizing that and, you know, coming back in the room and correcting it immediately. And really, it wasn't even a technical correction. It's more of a, you know, an awareness and a mental correction. So I like where he's at. Where Metcalf's at, you know, like you said, two World Cups in a row where I think he's 8-0 and, doing some good things. The Iranian match was too close. He made a comment that he didn't know why he wasn't making a lot of moves into him. He goes, he's behind 3-1. He's not doing anything. Well, he's not doing anything because if he's within striking distance with 30 or 20 seconds to go, that's when he can start wrestling. And so he took away a really, really valuable lesson there. He shut him down and did a good job of winning the match in the hand ring, but I don't think it was the way that he wanted to do it.
So the World Cup, obviously, that's a major event on U.S. soil. We've got the World Championships in Las Vegas coming up in September. But another announcement that's come through the pipe by USA Wrestling is, I guess we're keeping it with Coach Brands here because this is, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Coach Brands, you're the man when it comes to this type of stuff. Is the Olympic Trials are back in Iowa City 2016. The road to Rio will go through Carver-Hawkeye Arena yet again. Thoughts on that announcement?
Well, number one, I think it's obviously great for the sport. Selfishly, it's to have it in Iowa, and even more selfishly, it's great to have it at Carver-Hawkeye Arena. But the bottom line is objectively, even people in competitors that aren't Iowa Hawkeye wrestling fans, they loved it here. And I couldn't tell you how many people, and surprisingly, some of the competitors that are as, you know, anti-Iowa as you could get, loved wrestling here, loved wrestling in front of that crowd, and had nothing but great things to say about it. So, you know, it's the right thing to do. It was, you know, a really great effort by, you know, the University of Iowa administration, you know, our Better Business guy, Josh Schomburger, and then, you know, Tom and, you know, the guys around the athletic department that way did a pretty good job of getting together, and then Fender and Les Gutches, and, you know, being able to, you know, move some things around. Both parties did, and both parties, you know, like maybe the first choice, and then came around, and then there was the negotiations. And, I mean, this has been going on for a while. I don't know if you know how long it's been going on, but it's been kind of, you know, I've been on real thin ice, just on wondering if USA Wrestling is going to do the right thing here, because, you know, the dates weren't matching up and this kind of thing. But overall, this is a great thing for wrestling. No question.
Well, I'm going to go back in time. When I was still working at USA Wrestling for the 2012 trials, I was a little personally conflicted here because I don't know if you remember, one of the cities that was bidding for the Olympic trials in 12 was Hampton, Virginia. I grew up 5 minutes from there. So I'm looking at all things. And, of course, I'm completely biased. I would love to go home to my basically the arena that got me into wrestling and be able to see the Olympic trials there. But I looked at it, you know, facility wise, I think Hampton had a good facility. I think they had a lot of stuff that they were offering. But ultimately, when you look at comparing the two facilities and the areas around it back in 2012, where are your wrestling fans going to come from in Hampton, Virginia? We've got a good wrestling community down there, but we wouldn't be able to put 10,000 people into the Hampton Coliseum. Whereas at Carver-Hawkeye, boom, there's 12, 13, 14, 15,000 people at the drop of a hat ready to see wrestling. So while I would have loved to have seen it go back home for me 4 years ago or 3.5 years ago at this point, you know, Carver was the right choice in 2012. Obviously, Josh Schomburger and the staff, and you talked about them, they did a tremendous job with it. So, once I walked into Carver in 12, I'm like, you know what? I would have loved to have gone home, but there's no way you could have matched it. So with 16, I'd have to agree with you. I think it's the right choice. Again, not blowing smoke. You go where the wrestling fans are. I mean, we've tried Vegas. We've tried Indianapolis. I thought the trials in Indy were pretty good because of the centrally located. But when you look at an intimate atmosphere, I mean, Carver, and I talked about this with Coach Gable when I was on the when I hosted the Attack Style Wrestling podcast with Daryl and Lee Weber. We talked about Carver, and when you go in as a non-Hawkeye to that place, it gets sometimes it can get under your skin and it makes you want to come back. So now we've got just everybody's Team USA. I mean, yeah, there's going to be your fans rooting for the Hawkeyes and the Hawkeye Club and those who have wrestled for Iowa. But in the most part, it's kind of more of a it's more of an unbiased type of crowd because they're going to sit there and appreciate the sport of wrestling. You're going to see, like international, you're going to see the claps after the good scrambles and no scores and things like that. So that's my little piece on the trials and the history there.
I agree. I could agree with you more, and you're right there. I agree.
John, your thoughts on the trials coming back to the state of Iowa?
Yeah, I think it's great, and the last one was great. And, you know, if you want to build the fan base, you know, it kind of paints an imagination for the wrestlers and the fans. Hey, this is where the venue is going to be. I mean, if you look at even, you know, high school state tournaments, people know that venue in their mind. They're dreaming, they're visualizing it, and they're looking forward to going there each year. And the great competitors, they don't, if they're out of state, they'll rise to the challenge, even if they got haters there that don't like them. They want to win. But knowing where it's at makes it easier for the fans to get there, the wrestlers to visualize it, and grow that fan base every year. If it's consistent, people know that's where they're going, and it doesn't. I mean, I think sometimes the World Team Trials could be there every year in the Olympic Trials, but I'm from Iowa. But, you know, if we're trying to grow a fan base for the World Cup, you know, maybe that's where the World Cup could be. I don't know, but I mean, even the Iranians were saying they felt they had more Iranians there in Los Angeles than the Americans, and it helped them. So if we want to build a crowd and we think that can help our wrestlers, you know, at these events, I mean, the Iranian wrestlers said it helped them. Why wouldn't we want to grow and go where we can get the biggest fan base on an international level and not just think, you know, turf wars in the U.S., but what's best overall for USA Wrestling?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I'd be interesting to see the World Cup in Carver Hawkeye. That's for sure. That's a plus. You know, I'm gonna. You know, you're from Iowa. You guys are both from Iowa. I'm at least a reasonable drive. So I'm kind of like, hey, all right, I'm Midwest. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Plus, right. It's also going to be a time of a year where I don't have to worry about a snowstorm and getting stuck in Charles City, Iowa overnight either.
Hey, the home of Mike Jerome, Charles City.
Really?
Well, I just know when I drove through that, when I was leaving that Penn State duel, I've talked about this on this show and others, is when I remember driving past, once I got past Waverly, I'm like, man, I really blew an opportunity. I should have called Keller. You know, I was looking for, I needed some place to stay that night. But moving on to our next topic, and it's been kind of one that at this time of year, all of us that are in the sport of wrestling, especially in college wrestling, we know that it's kind of an ominous type of part of the year where, all right, season's over, spring sports are kicking up, and what are the athletic directors and the schools going to do with those winter sports? I mean, you know, somebody have called it spring sports cutting season, or, you know, and we looked at it, and we had two programs on the block in the last 2 weeks, Northern State in Division II, and then we had Cleveland State in Division I. Both those programs quickly got support to keep them alive. And Northern State was a little interesting, as their administration said that they were going to go on a 2-year suspension. And this is after Pat Timm had announced his resignation. He was going to step down from coaching after being there 15 years. And what I found interesting, and I talked with Mike Boyer and the folks at the NWCA about this, is they went out and raised almost $500,000, like, right away to save that program, a Division II program in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And there is no suspension. Now they've got a new coach involved. They had hired a new coach. Pat Timm's sitting around to stay involved. That was a quick way to rectify a potentially bad situation. Then we get to Cleveland State. And I had him, I had the AD, John Perry, on short time to talk about this lacrosse decision. And there seemed to be a lot of questions that were unanswered. And ultimately, Wrestlers and Business Network and the people in Cleveland really got that involved, the student fees. So first of all, let's go with Coach McGovern with from a smaller school situation where, you know, we've got enrollment-driven colleges. We've seen a lot of additions in collegiate wrestling below Division I. But when you see a school dropping wrestling that is enrollment-driven or at least suspending it, you know, there's always that worry. You know, obviously Northern State's kind of got to make you feel good that local community picked it up and said, hey, you know, we're having wrestling here in South Dakota.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a couple of things. I mean, yeah, D3 programs are growing because they're enrollment-driven, but, you know, really the exciting part that's almost as equally important as an endowment or coming in the back end and NWCA saving the program is look where Bruce Baumgartner's at. Look where Joe Heskett, now Matt Valenti's an assistant athletic director. If you get those guys in the athletic director positions, you don't have to deal with an athletic director that wants to promote lacrosse over, you know, wrestling. I mean, we want our wrestlers to rise up in the leader positions and support those, you know, wrestling programs. So, I mean, I think the leadership investment and coaches going to, if they can go into athletic director positions is almost as equal to an endowment in some ways, but it's not permanent forever because they're not going to work there forever. But, you know, I like that we do have, you know, those kind of things happening.
As we move to Division I, Terry, Cleveland State, this is one that's a program that did qualify two guys for the national tournament. They haven't had an All-American in 20 years. But, I mean, you've done the assistant coaching tour. You've been a head coach. You know what – you know, your name gets thrown around a lot for any head job, no matter how big or how small. And when you see some of these smaller programs – for them to be competitive, they need to put in the resources. Just having a scholarship allotment isn't enough. I mean, I talked to Ben Stahura. Or actually, I talked to people close to Ben Stahura at Cleveland State, and it said, you know, his salary isn't really on par with a lot of Division I coaches. His top assistant is probably half of what most Division I coaches get. And, you know, that's one thing that these administrators have to believe. So what can a coach do? I mean, you spent time at Montana State Northern, so you know what it's like to be at a really small school. But what can some of these programs do, these fan bases that are worried about their programs, and be like, hey, we know we don't have the resources that the big dogs do. What can we do to make up for that?
Well, from a financial view, financial one-to-one method, and you have that two-prong attack where you have your 3 to 5 year plan, and then you have your endowment plan. And what you said about Northern State in the small community of Aberdeen, South Dakota, raising $500,000, I'm not surprised. That's what wrestling people do. Problem is that wrestling people aren't proactive. It's not going to happen to us mentality is too prevalent, you know, in our sport and in our programs. And we have to be proactive in the NWCA to keep saying that they have answers of, well, we're adding X amount of programs every year. We're not talking D1 programs here, buddy. We got to start talking about adding D1 programs. And you're always going to get the D2, D3, and the NAIAs coming along. And if you get a D1 program to add, that's when you're really going to get some kickback or upstart with the smaller divisions and programs. Because for example, like a Great Falls College, when they see a D1 surge in wrestling programs, it's going to make, it's going to be a no-brainer to that administration to start that program instead of wait, 10 years ago. Maybe they started it 30 years ago. And look at what they're doing, in the NAIA. Well, let's start a Division I program. Let's start using our resources. Let's have, our NWCA president start coming up with ideas to start Division I wrestling program. And use funds from these duels, and we got a one prong attack on that. We think that moving to a dual format is going to change the way administrators think about a sport. Well, Missouri thinks that now because they won, but what if they didn't win? And then what about all the other schools that are on the chopping block or close to it, or like you said, that are smaller budget. What are those ADs thinking? Do we have to wait till they win the national duel to keep them solid or to get them solid? No. You have to be proactive. So you have to have number one, it has to be internal from the coach. The coach has to drive the short range plan and the long range plan, number one. And then number two, you have to have the NWCA. And Gable is a magnificent resource for people to use. I mean, he's always talking about how he's every day he's working on saving the sport. Well, let's get him involved with, whoever. Temple just started a club program, I think. Wayne Boyd's from Temple. He was an NCAA champion in 1968 or 69. They don't even have a program, but they started a club sport. So maybe we go to them and say, hey, what would it take to get you reinstated? They're starting a club sport, or USC has a club sport out in Southern California. What do you do with that? Or there's been rumors that Fresno State is going to start. Well, what do we have to do to get this stuff to happen where it's on the up and up, this kind of thing? And the school out in California that Lenny Zaleski was at, I can't even remember it now. That's terrible. But he had a national champion, and then they dropped it the next year. That's crazy. That's crazy. And I know California went through some budget issues and Title IX and this and that, but be proactive. You know these things are coming up. I mean, if you can read the economy and invest and not go broke when the market crashes, how can you not, read that? Well, if the market crashes, some D1 programs are going to be looking to act, and wrestling is going to be one of those sports. So you get in front of that stuff. And here I am, I'm getting all excited, and I don't want it to be like I have all the answers, and I say this all the time, when you talk about the marketing of the sport and this and that. I don't have those answers. But, Mike Boyer ought to have them. For us to lose that Cleveland State program again on his watch, that's inexcusable to me. Where's the pulse? Where's your finger on the pulse? And again, it's not his fault, but doesn't his job title dictate that he should have a pretty dang good reading on the national scene of college wrestling programs? Or am I just asking too much as a selfish Division I program coach in the strongest conference in America? Because that's maybe what some of my opponents would say. So you tell me.
All right. Well, having experience, having worked in that office for 3 years full time, and then obviously my relationship, I do their media relations on a freelance role. I've seen every day. I know how many calls Mike has made to Division I programs day in, day out, talking to athletic directors. I've seen it. I've heard it. I've heard all, his buzz phrases. So it's not like he's not trying. And I'll say that. I mean, I think some people will look at it and be like, if any program drops, it's on him. Well, at Cleveland State, I actually, when I talked to the AD, I talked to people close to the program, they were in trouble, and they made sure that when they hired Ben Stahura, first of all, this is not – Cleveland State's not a job you would take, because it would not be – it would not give you the resources that you would want. Now, John Smith or Eric Guerrero, no big name would take that. They got a guy that was local who had built a program at Division II Limestone and had the largest roster in wrestling. He had 70 guys on the roster at Limestone. So he can build a program. He can build enrollment. So he gets the job at Cleveland State because he's a builder. He was building his enrollment, but all of the enrollment money that he was building, you know, all the upgrades, facility upgrades and the locker room stuff, that was coming out of that money that he was raising. So he was being proactive. He just didn't have enough time to fully have endowed the program. So he was working toward that endowment, and then the AD, as a lacrosse guy, wanted to add lacrosse and made it happen, and now wrestling had to fight for scraps to get their program back. So with Cleveland State, Ben's doing the right things. It's time. He doesn't have a whole lot of resources, so he's doing it all more on his own. He's got a little bit of institutional support, but every upgrade that needs to be made comes out of that enrollment money he's raising. He's not getting that money from the school.
I know that. And I'm not saying that he's not doing a good job. What I'm saying is, and the reason why he said, you tell me, I'm not telling you to tell me how good of a job they're doing. I know that. What I'm saying is where is our emergency fund? You know, I mean, is that too much to ask an emergency fund?
How much does the emergency fund have to be? That's my question, because I hear that a lot, because these schools are throwing out multi-million dollar ransom. So Arizona State wanted $8 million. So how much would it take for $8 million to be raised? Okay, there's one program goes down. Oh, we're back to square one. So, I mean, that's the one question I have with like a fund is, well, we know that wrestling people, you know, there's money in wrestling, and then there's the people that are stingy with money in wrestling. Being a media guy that has subscription parts of things, I know how tight people can be. But how much money do we need to protect every potential program?
Well,
I guess
I'm
is kind of the $64 million question.
I'm not talking about Mike Novogratz or Art Moratori or Dave Barry having to go around and save every program
right.
in America. What I'm saying is where is – okay – where's the NWCA's emergency fund? Who's going to hold them hostage? If we had an emergency fund, maybe we could go to somebody and say, hey, we're going to give you X amount of money. You start the program. Would you start the program if we give you the starter budget? And they'll either say yes or no. There's programs out there that will do that. You got to find them. Is it going to take a lot of work? Yeah. Well, okay, so what? I guess my question back to whoever wants to answer it is then is how important is this to us? I mean, what's $8 million? I mean, $8 million to Arizona State is different than $8 million to Cleveland State because of the booster situation they're in. But if we're in front of it, then how important is Cleveland State to us? Oh, we're just down to 76. It's okay. We'll figure it out later. 77, the difference between 77 programs and 76 programs isn't that big of a deal. We just lost a program in the heart of wrestling America. You know, 8 hours from Iowa in 2 hours or an hour and a half from the national champions this year, Ohio State. We just lost the program right there. So how important is it to us? I'm not saying that you know, the Cleveland State administration and the wrestling staff isn't doing their job. I'm saying that you asked me proactively, and I reflectively how to do it. And maybe he's doing it. You know, maybe he is. Okay, when he gets in trouble, where's our help? Where's our emergency fund? You tell me the entity. Do we have to have another wrestling organization that will come in alongside of that and help? What's that one that USA Wrestling has that?
What, the US Wrestling Foundation?
The what? The one that
Jeff Waters. Yeah, the US Wrestling Foundation, I believe is the name of it.
Okay, what are they doing? NWCA doing? What's Gable doing? What are the museums doing? What's Gable's museum doing? What's the National Wrestling Hall of Fame doing? It's endless. It's endless. There's ways to do it. You could do it. I mean, if you were hired in a some kind of a position that was about you would figure out a way to do it, Jason. That's what I'm saying. I mean, is the NWCA not responsible for that? If they're not responsible for that, tell me, and I can get off of Moyer's tail. But I'm not going to get off his tail until you tell me otherwise, because at some point, we're going to be down to 60 programs, maybe, and then there's going to be a snowball effect because we're down to 60 programs. We're going to be like the gymnastics is. And I don't know if you guys saw those articles that the U.S. Boutique put out, but they are deeply concerned about the state of Olympic sports at the NCAA level.
Oh, absolutely. It should be. I mean, the autonomy with the power conference. I mean, this whole thing is, it's not just going to affect wrestling. Actually, Jim Harshaw was on Flow Wrestling talking about, on their show, talking about the snowball effect. It's not just going to affect, you know, wrestling. It's gymnastics. It's baseball. It's everything that's considered non-revenue, because some places baseball's a revenue sport. Some places it's not. I mean, we've seen baseball cut. We've seen soccer cut. We've seen lacrosse added, but we've also seen it cut. So anything that's not basketball or football is kind of at risk. And, you know, I as far as the fun goes, I don't know if one exists. I know that there are 15 new programs starting next year. Again, they're not Division I, but there are 15 brand new ones, you know, providing opportunities next year. This might sound like a sales pitch, and just hear me out here for a minute. The Division I landscape is different than those other ones, because we do have all these other things that are coming. You've got, you know, multi-million dollar, you got 110,000 seat stadiums for football. You don't have that at Division II in the NAIA. So there's this entitlement generation that says, I want money now. And you know who I think deserves the money is the half-ride athletes that basically, you know, pay the tuition. They're the ones that need the money, not the guy that's staying for a year and a half, 2 years in Bolton for the NBA or the NFL. So that's another soapbox topic entirely. But I think it's Fresno State will be adding in 2017-18. That has been confirmed by their university president. The search for a coach, that type of stuff hasn't been announced as yet. But I think when you're looking at the Division I landscape, it's a different animal than the other divisions, because you've got, you know, there have been times I've heard people have gone up to certain schools and go, hey, I have $8 million, will you start a wrestling program? And they go, no, because they don't need it. They don't, like, the SEC doesn't need it. They could have it. Every school could afford it and probably make money off of it. They don't need it. So a little soapbox harping topic there that I didn't answer your question. As far as, is there a fund existing? I don't know. I know it for every program that could be in trouble, that'd be, we're looking at, you know, do we take our programs hostage now to where, all right, well, you know what? Wrestling's going to save their program. We just got to say, we're going to cut them and we're going to get free $8 million. That's eventually going to run out. That's just my two cents.
$8 million number isn't my number.
Well, it's what Arizona State used. And,
but it's not my number. $8 million isn't anywhere near what Chattanooga has. You know, it's
right. That's for the endowment, because they don't want, oh, just give us the operating budget. These schools will want the program endowed.
I understand that. But okay, so maybe you and I are good to debate this, because you're on that side of it. And I'm saying, okay, hey, it doesn't matter if they're going to hold us hostage or not, because they're not. They're people are dropping programs anyway. They're dropping them anyway. We're losing them without them having us hold stock. You understand what I'm saying there?
Absolutely. I mean, I totally get the argument both sides. It's just one of those. I don't think every program's situation is the same as another. I think every single one of them is unique. And it's like, I think from where I would sit, if I were trying to coordinate all this, I'd have to know the ins and outs of every single college program on the back of my hand to be like, okay, what's the contingency for each and every program? And that to me is a full-time job in itself.
And that would be what I would see as, you know, the NWCA should be doing, is that National Wrestling Coaches Association, right or wrong?
I think that would be a definite option for sure.
To me, what you just said there is exactly right. You should have your hand or your finger on the pulse of every single Division I wrestling program, and you better know your Division II, III, and NAIA schools and their coaches. That's in the job description. That's like saying Martinetti wasn't a good politician, that's why we lost the sport. That's bull crap. We do a lot of sport because people weren't doing their jobs foreign or abroad and domestically.
Let's just take Jeff Swenson from Augsburg. He built Augsburg up, stopped coaching, but then got into a role as an athletic director. But then really what he did is he expanded the opportunities for Division III wrestlers by working with the NCAA committee and getting us to increase our qualifiers. In the end, the NCAA could be the one that stipulates the opportunities in sports. Like the Iowa Conference, you have to field 19 sports. So wrestling is really not, we're not going to be dropped. If we get people working within, within NCAA wrestling and making the change from the NCAA and saying, look, you need to offer so many sports. And if you've had these sports for this many years, I mean, it seems like this is stuff that the NCAA needs to say, look, it's not just about football and basketball making money, but these opportunities for all that have been offered for years, but also from a high school participation standpoint, the NCAA should want to say, hey, we are offering this many opportunities for these many athletes coming out of high school and wrestling. Based on the numbers, we need to have these many NCAA programs that have wrestling because we have such a high participation rate in high school. But people like Swenson or because it's not just the coaches, we need to get people involved with the NCAA. That's just a
You're exactly right. And that has to, you have to have dynamic people that can do that. You have to have, Elinsky, that name immediately comes to mind. A guy like that. I don't know, you know, maybe I don't know him that well, but it's a dynamic guy that can do stuff. You have to have a guy like, I don't know, somebody that is charismatic and dynamic and honest and has integrity that the NCAA wants to be around and that they trust.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have what word am I looking for here, guys?
Moxie, personality.
Yeah, but you know the power, not muscle, because that sounds mafia-ish. But you have to have that clout, that status, that you know you're a smart businessman. You know how to take care of your money. You know how to spend money. You're frugal, and you can bring these ideas in front of them. I think that's what you know Augsburg has done. I think you know maybe that's not fair because they're up in Minneapolis. I mean, where do we draw the line at? You know, which region of the country is it okay to drop a sport in, and which one isn't it? Because in 1991, we had 36 gymnastics programs and 110 wrestling programs. Now we got 76 wrestling programs, or 77, whichever way you want to look at it, 16 gymnastics programs. So where do you want to say it's okay to drop, and where isn't it okay? You know, see, that's where I'm at with it. It's like the NRA. Why is the NRA successful? You can like the NRA, the National Rifle Association, or hate them. But whether you like them or hate them, the bottom line is they don't compromise, and that's why the Americans still have the right to you know, own and bear arms, period. They do not compromise.
But that's why the NWCA, in some ways, is like a lobbyist. We need somebody that's in the NCAA, like in the office.
You put people in front of them, and you, yeah, I agree, John, I agree. And who's more charismatic than wrestling people?
Right.
I mean, come on. I mean, can we not, I mean, look at Bob Bowlsby. Bob Bowlsby's a great name. He's the commissioner of the Big 12. You know, his brother was a national champ at Iowa, and, you know, he's a wrestling guy. He was an AD at Iowa, and one of the most successful eras in the history of Iowa wrestling. And he orchestrated that with Gable. And now he's the commissioner of the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be a name. You know, I don't know what Moyer's relationship is with him, but, you know, I know that I talked to Bob Bowlsby last week, and he's not confident that Texas is going to be starting the program anytime soon. Maybe we need to tell Texas that they can't beat Oklahoma in wrestling, because they probably could.
they never
beat Oklahoma State. Hey, Texas Longhorns, that's what I'm saying. You'll never beat Oklahoma State. Maybe that's the message that you need to do. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but if that gets the hair on the back of the booster's neck to stand up, if they hear that they can't beat an Oklahoma school in wrestling, maybe that's what gets them going, and that's what you got to get going. That's kind of a joke. I'm saying that in pun and in fun, but you, what I'm saying is it's find the way to get it done. Hire, create, give, donate, boost, whatever word you want to use. You know, what you say about being held hostage, I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I buy that. I don't know, would Lock Haven really hold the NWCA hostage and say, oh, we're going to drop our program now because, you know, or Bloomsburg or anybody. I just don't see that. Is there really that kind of people out there? You know, if there is, then we got to be talking about changes in humanity. We got to be human doings and not human beings. I heard that recently this week. That's a great thing. Be a human doing. Don't be a human being. You know, as wrestling people, we have to be human doing. And that's big. And that's where Gable, you know, he says he's working on saving wrestling. If he's working on saving wrestling, he better find some help. Because how, if he's working on wrestling, there's no way that Cleveland State should have been able to even get that close. And by the way, your interview was awesome, Jason, with Cleveland State.
I appreciate it. The human doing versus human being, I kind of like that. And I think that's not just a byproduct of typing it wrong on your phone either. Or maybe it was. You typed it in one day and went, that makes a whole lot of sense. Let's not correct that. Let's do a human doing.
Yeah, a good friend of mine pointed that out to me this week, and that it's worth repeating because you know what? It's true. And you can take that from the littlest arena all the way to the biggest arena. And by golly almighty, we should be starting Division I wrestling program. Kyra Berry, you guys familiar with her? She's the team leader for the women in the last year.
Yes.
Last couple of years. Are you familiar with her?
Absolutely.
She's on fire about starting women's wrestling program. Okay, so, you know, we're going to get a boost because of that. She's got muscle behind her. She's got money behind her. She's got good charisma. She's got a persuasive husband that knows a lot of really, really good people. And she probably does herself. I just don't know as well as I know Dave. But what I'm saying is let's get her to go in front of Texas and say, hey, you can be the first Division I wrestling school to start a women's wrestling program, and at the same time, why don't you just add that? Yeah, Terry, you're just saying that's easy and this and that's unrealistic. Well, you know what? Then, like I said, where are we going to start, or when are we? But where is the line? Who do we have to start with? Fresno State, Utah Valley State did it. Fresno State's getting back into it. You know, Chattanooga still has their program. You know, Slippery Rock. Maybe we need to start. Do we need to start at Slippery Rock, or should we start at University of Southern California? Or should we start at Texas? You know, you tell me. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't have the answers, but this call, and it's getting long now, but this call is about, you know what, Cleveland State. If that doesn't get a wrestling guy's attention, then you know what, John and Jason, I don't know what would.
I'm agree with you there. You beat me up on this stuff, and I didn't have a whole lot for you, but you know what? That's why we have these discussions here on the World Wrestling Resource. And with that, we could probably talk about this topic for another day and a half. But
hey, hold on, though. One more thing. Last thing I'm going to say. I'm not beating up on you. You don't really feel like I'm beating up.
No, but you beat me on some points that I didn't have a response to.
No,
so I concede part of the argument.
I don't want to beat you on the point. And you know what? Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say I concede to you.
Well, I just conceded. You can't concede to a concede. You can't triple stamp a double stamp.
Well, what I'm saying is I'm not trying to win a debate against you, Jason. That's not my intent. My intent is that I know that if Jason Bryant was hired to save college wrestling in America, within 5 years you would have a short range and a long range financial plan and a working physical plan moving forward. That's the kind of guy you are. I know that would get done. And I'm saying is with the resources that we have, and names like Dan Gable who are begging to be used and want to be used, where's our excuse? That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that I out-debated you. I'm not trying to out-debate you. That's not my point. So I'm done. I appreciate it. Thanks to the Vets to open and everything else.
All right, John, final thoughts.
Well, Jerry makes a lot of good points, and, you know, you're right. I mean, Cleveland, I mean, that's wrestling mecca. I mean, St. Ed's and all the fans, so all the numbers could be on our side, but one person in the wrong position can make a lot of havoc, but get people in the right positions, and we can do a lot of good things, too.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.